This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Okay, well, again, thank you for coming to this event. I figured that with a subject as invigorating as gifts of net worth, there would be a relatively narrow crowd here, people with narrow interests on gifts of net worth. So thank you for coming. I appreciate this. Let's begin by saying that if you came to hear some tips and maybe other ways to be a bit smoother and quicker and better at separating people with money from their dollars to fund your ministry, then this is the wrong place for you, and you need to find, I don't know, is there such a session here? we're here to talk about funding ministry, but on a much broader scale, with a long range look. When in all of ministry, there are two primary resources that are needed. It's basically money and manpower. So for any ministry to function, you need money and you need manpower, or more properly, human resources and financial resources. And these are the two great needs. All agree that God has the resources available among his people to fund his work. But the question is, so how do these funds flow to ministry? So that's what I want to discuss here today. And I want to say at this point that let me work my way through the presentation, and then if you have questions, kind of hold them, and then we should be through in good time for you then to ask questions. And then we'll just kind of spend the rest of our time discussing the questions. But so how do funds flow to ministry? Well, how are we currently funding our ministries? Most of the funds that are flowing to conservative Anabaptist missions are coming from current income gifts. They're coming from tithes and offerings from W-2 wage earners. Their tithes and offerings from business owners, their gifts from cash-generating investments. And by current income, I mean they're coming from a revenue stream or profit that's earned during the current accounting period. So it's essentially current income flowing to ministries. This current income-based funding produces a static or fairly fixed flow of dollars going to charity. Now, the dollar amount will probably change from year to year. It'll increase incrementally as the conservative Anabaptist census grows, as there are more of us and more businesses among us, more dollars will flow to ministry. But while that census is growing, something else is growing right with that. It's the number of ministries that we have among us. It's the number of, as we have more children, we need more schools. And as we have more human resources, we need more financial resources. So all this to say this is a fairly static number. And I don't know that we have a good way as a people or as a constituency to analyze what that number is. Now, it will also rise and fall on national economic conditions. For those of us who were involved in ministry from about 2008 through 9, 10, 11, we could see how that the economy affected the flow of funds to our ministry. But the point of it all is that the dollar amount is sliced and diced differently among our missions from year to year. This is the how it affects us. Current income-based funding produces a static amount of funds going to charity, and so these funds are just sliced and diced differently from year to year. Now, maybe you're sitting there and saying, wait, you're overstating that, and I probably am, but it's to make the point. The total amount remains just about the same. So how are funds sliced and diced? Some factors are beyond your mission's control. Take, for example, a tsunami, an earthquake in Haiti, a war breaks out somewhere in an area where there are Anabaptist missions. And so funds begin to flow toward that disaster area. There may be some new dollars, but most of those dollars that were flow, let's say, and I'll use a case and example is the earthquake in Haiti in, which year was that?
2010.
Funds in seven figures rushed to Haiti from our people. Those were probably not new dollars that otherwise would not have gone to charity, but probably half, I'm just pulling a number out of the air, half or more were redirected, which meant that due to nothing that you did in your ministry to cause such an effect, funds that otherwise would have gone to your ministry went somewhere else. And it kind of presents that, I'll use the C word, in spite of the fact that as we sit here in a nonprofit charitable environment, we don't like to say compete. And I certainly am not advocating that we start competing, but there are competing needs, and the funds flow where there's a high level of awareness. And if there's a highly publicized event, like a national disaster, wars and so on, funds will flow there, and it's not due to something that you did or did not do. It's just the reality of the slicing and dicing of this static flow of funds going to charity. Startup ministries are drawing from the same funds. Now, there are some factors within your mission's control. One is building a vision-driven support base. And this is not the point of this presentation, but if you have a clearly defined vision and you have reduced it into strategic, missions that you carry out, and you have a support base that understands this and it catches the vision, then that will kind of draw funds. And they'll be sliced and diced in such a way that your vision will be funded and your mission work will get done. Some of it is built around effective ministry presentations. There may be some very worthy causes, some let's say biblical needs that go not unfunded, but funded at less than they need to be because the presentation is not done effectively, or at least as effectively as others are making their presentations. But ultimately, the point is that the same dollars are being cut up. Actually, let me just hit the pause button right here and just add. So before we kind of leave this question of competing charities. Charities competing for the same funds. Are there any observations or any questions or comments that you would have?
So how wise is it for us to look outside our group for funding?
How wise is it to look outside your group?
Yeah.
And by group, you mean by outside of the conservative Anabaptist constituency? Well, let me turn that around and ask present the question to all the wisdom seated here.
When they're done, I'll talk.
Well, God did that when he delivered the children out of Egypt. He pulled the Egyptians, right?
To this question, would you include in that, like, auctions? We've been involved in a number of auctions for prison ministry, schools and whatnot. They brought money that obviously would be from the outside, the dollars that otherwise would not have been part of this picture. Benefit auction.
So the response to the question is, would you, Brother Clayton, would you include like auctions and other kinds of events where you're drawing a crowd that is non-Anabaptist?
I didn't think that through. I mean, that would classify that way, I guess. We're in York County, one county west of Lancaster, and 95% of our support comes from Lancaster County. And so... Well, there's not very many Mennonites in York County. And so if we're going to only, you know, should we go after the businesses in York or the others in York to build that up? Or, you know, if this is true, what you're saying, that all of Lancaster County's tithes are being divided, and here's one more place, and that's outside the county, that's York County, should we be looking to...
Well, no, what you have to ask is, would your ministry only minister to the Anabaptist community or outside of the Anabaptist?
Ours is mostly non-Anabaptist.
Well, then I would say, yeah.
So the beneficiaries are because the local community.
If you're helping the local community, I would think it would be only wise to garner support from the community that's being benefited.
Unpause. Let's go on to the... There are 50 ministries displaying here at REACH 2017. All are dependent... This is a general statement, but all are dependent on the same revenue stream. And while we represent a broad spectrum of conservative Anabaptist churches, all share predictable funding through these same churches. At REACH 2015... by the way, take this with a grain of salt. I was looking for my number, and I couldn't find my file, but I think in 2015, I made the rounds of the display area, and I asked all of the participating ministries, how much of your budget is coming from this constituency? And, of course, for some, it's all of it, and for others, it's a part of it, and so on. And the number that I came up with, as I recall, was right around $60 million. So let's say, just for illustrative purposes, $60 million is the amount that's being sliced and diced here. So will anything change significantly in the future? Or will we just continue cutting up the same dollars? The increasing number of ministries dependent on the same current income stream, they bring predictable funding challenges. So we'll now leave that idea, but what I wanted to do is lay down this need for an alternative revenue stream to fund our works of charity that is coming from a different source. So if you might look at it this way, that that a need is presented, mostly we reach into our pockets and we get out our wallet, and kind of out of our current cash we make a gift to charity. But there's an alternative revenue stream where most of among our constituency there is net worth that has been developing over the years. And so there is also the possibility that when there is a need presented, that a donor can reach back onto the pile of stuff that has been accumulating and make a gift from that pile rather than from his wallet. If this makes sense. And a gift of net worth. alternative funding, as I presented here, as through a planned giving program that utilizes the underlying asset base to offset the effect of cutting up the same current income dollars. So, what is planned giving? Well, it's more than planning to make a cash gift from current income. Sometimes people say, well, yes, I plan to give. Is that what you're talking about? Yes, but not from current income. Asset-based gifts of net worth are generally larger than can be made from current income. They're often once-in-a-lifetime events through an estate plan. They offset taxes when transferring assets. So current income gifts generate ordinary income tax deductions. Gifts of net worth generate capital gains tax deductions. There are three different kinds of planned gifts. The first one is current use gifts, gifts that minister now. So again, to your question, if you're in need of a gift that ministers now, where the funds are available right now, a gift from current income may be your best avenue. Or a planned gift, but make sure it's a current use gift, because there are also planned gifts that are future use gifts. And they will minister, but they'll minister later. And this is much more than just an annual budget question. And this whole session is not just about annual budgeting. It's about taking a longer view and building an alternative revenue stream that will over time fund your ministry. But you would not want to be dependent upon just this revenue stream, because future use gifts and life income gifts are, and I'll just be blunt, they depend on when people die. Okay, so this is an uncomfortable subject for us to talk about. And so you do need the current income-based giving as well. Future use gifts minister later. Life income gifts, and by the way, life income gifts are also future use gifts, but it's kind of in a different category in that they are gifts that give back to the donor, generally the interest income or the earnings from that gift for their lifetime or the lifetime of the beneficiary. Now, a little more about current use gifts. They fund charitable work at the time they are given. They are often outright cash gifts from sale of assets, or they are outright gifts that use appreciated assets as a substitute for cash. So it can be cash or it can be an appreciated asset, but it's dispersed in such a way that it generates cash immediately. Some tools for current use gifts. These are charitable giving tools. A charitable gift fund is one, and we'll talk more about this later, and a charitable lead trust. Perhaps you've heard about charitable trusts, and generally if you've heard about a charitable trust, you're thinking of a charitable remainder trust. There is also such a thing as a charitable lead trust. I have kind of thought it's like Sasquatch. Am I saying that right? I know they're out there, but I've never seen one. Yeah. That's what charitable lead trusts are like. And has anybody here ever seen a charitable lead trust? It's a legal entity that's can be done, but it just doesn't happen much. And generally, the way it works is that if you think about a charitable remainder trust, places an asset into a trust, and then the asset is used, and then the remainder, after a specified period of time, then the remainder goes to charity. Whereas in a lead trust, the asset is placed in trust, the earnings from that asset go to charity, and that at the end of a specified time, the asset goes back to someone else. And what is you're receiving is the earnings during that specified time. I think, actually, I think that there are probably other ways to accomplish that that maybe back then were not so readily available to us. Future use gifts, gifts that fund charitable work in the future, triggered by certain events. Cash or gifts of appreciated assets is what they generally are, often through the estate, and they're payable upon death. Some tools for future use gifts, charitable bequests, and endowments. And while we're at this point, again, let me pause and mention this, that a charitable bequest is what it is just putting into your will how you want an asset to be distributed upon your death. When the will is drawn up, then these decisions need to be made. And so sometimes as the years go on and the assets change in value and the individual's interests shift, and maybe his heart is drawn by God to another kind of ministry, sometimes the will is not changed just because it's a legal process and it's going to be expensive to go back to an attorney and have them change the will. One of the things that we as an organization offer is a charitable bequest plan whereby if you in your will make a bequest to Anabaptist Foundation and say, distribute my assets through based on the plan on file with Anabaptist Foundation, then rather than having to change your will as other things change, all you need to do is just draft a new list, change your list, send it to Anabaptist Foundation, we keep it on file, and then when your estate is being settled, then that bequest will be mailed to the foundation and will distribute based on your most recent plan. It's a service that we offer. And also endowments is another future use gift. Life income gifts and other financial benefits, return benefits back to the donor, generally until the death of the donor or the last surviving beneficiary. They're often cash or gifts of appreciated assets, gifts reserving a life estate, for example. Tools are pooled income fund. This is one way it can be done. Real estate with a reserved life estate and charitable remainder trusts. Okay. The next section here is just to talk a little bit about, why does this make sense? Okay, there are capital gains, I call them tax opportunities. Gifts of net worth generate capital gains tax deductions. Remember that phrase? So what are capital gains taxes? Tax on profit realized when a capital asset is sold or transferred for more than the original purchase price. It's not due until the asset is transferred. So this is not a tax that you've been paying every year. So you can buy something, let's say a farm, you can buy that at whatever price you bought it, and then the capital gains tax is not due until you then transfer that asset to someone else. At that point, you realize the gain, and then that gain is taxable. So it's not due until the asset is transferred, and then the new owner receives a stepped-up basis, and then he starts again, starts the whole process over again. Now, I should mention that an asset like that can transfer tax-free, but it's upon death. So if you want to transfer it during life, that's when the capital gains tax is triggered, when assets change hands. Here are some capital gains tax rates. They vary based on your tax bracket, and this was 2 years ago, so maybe there have been some changes here. I put this slide in here just to say that capital gains tax planning is gaining in importance. Kind of a little play on words there. Capital gains tax gains importance. Okay, here's why. The entrepreneurial generation, these are the Americans that were born early in the 20th century, that weathered the Great Depression, that won World War II, and that birthed the baby boomers. This generation is now transferring their wealth. They're transferring their wealth to their children, the baby boomers, of which there are many of us. It's estimated that the current generation, this is the baby boomers, they will begin transferring this wealth that they're receiving, and it will be, and the number varies based on different estimates, but so again, think broadly, think nationally here, somewhere in excess of $30 trillion of net worth will be transferred by the baby boomers to the millennials.
Paul, are you saying 1944 and 1946 and 1964, those are the people that are transferring their wealth?
From 1946 to 1964, the baby boomers.
Yeah.
Okay. They have received wealth
from the
what's called the Great Generation. What Tom Brokaw in his book called the Great Generation. The people that weathered the Depression and realized all of the appreciation of the post-war economy. They transferred their wealth to the baby boomers, and now the baby boomers, when they transfer theirs, is going to be in the 30-plus trillion-dollar range. Any other questions about this? And it's estimated that this transfer of wealth will peak in 15 to 20 years. From 2030 to 2045. Which is going to be here, if the Lord tarries, sooner than any of us are thinking. It's estimated that during these years, 10% of total U.S. wealth will change hands every 5 years. And this includes conservative Anabaptist baby boomers. So the point is that this wealth, these assets, as they transfer, will trigger capital gains tax on a scale that is beyond comprehension. There's a reason, I think, that the Congress and the IRS tax code is changing the IRS tax code so that more and more wealth can be transferred tax-free through the estate tax. Threshold is being raised every year. And so that now, I'll just use round figures, round numbers here, I think that a husband and wife can now transfer tax-free around $12.5 to $13 million. That sound about right?
Combined.
Look at it this way. Wow, that's very nice. Isn't the Congress generous? I mean, they're becoming friendly to. Well, okay. So more and more assets can be transferred tax free, but think about all of the capital gains tax that is going to be triggered by all of this. So the capital gains tax is gaining importance over the next few decades. So as you think about the funding your ministry and developing an alternative source of revenue so that you're not so dependent upon the slicing and dicing that gets done every year, on a long range look, this is a way to develop that alternative funding. Some capital gains tax options, three different ones that I list here. One is, of course, you can pay the tax. And by the way, there are Okay, during the oil and gas boom, I'll call it, and I can just speak to Ohio and the shale bonanza that we experienced there, I saw something that I think is telling, that if the amount of dollars are so great, people just like swallow hard and pay the taxes, whatever they are, because there's still plenty left. And I thought, actually, this is kind of it kind of tests our stewardship. So there is one option, that's just to pay the tax. That's the most expensive option. Another option is to postpone the tax, do a 1031 like kind exchange. We can talk more about that later, or an installment sale that triggers capital gains taxes year by year, and hopefully you will be able to pay those capital gains tax at a lower rate because you're in a lower tax bracket than if you had everything in 1 year and you shot your tax bracket way up to the top. So that's part of the idea there. Or option three, avoid the tax through a gift of an entire property prior to the sale, or a partial sale and a partial gift. So let's talk about this concept just briefly. A partial gift and a partial sale. The idea is that if you are going to transfer or sell we'll use a farm just as a case and example, and you have a large capital gains tax, by gifting a portion of that farm to charity prior to the sale, you lower the amount of the sale. So let's, and again, we'll just use round numbers here. Let's say there's $1 million farm. To the buyer, it's all the same to him. He's buying it from two parties. The seller makes a gift of part of it to a charity. And so the charity then sells back to the seller, or to the buyer, their portion, and the buyer buys from the seller their portion. To the seller, let's say he makes a gift of $200,000. Now the sale is only an $800,000 sale rather than $1 million sale. You've effectively reduced the capital gains. Plus you've generated a tax deduction to take against the reduced capital gains. And what it does is, by working with pre-tax dollars, you can leverage the amount of dollars that you send to charity. That's the principle of it all. So some things to remember: that no capital gains tax sales are possible. For example, if someone says, I want to sell this asset, highly appreciated, I do not want to pay any capital gains tax, you can, based upon the tax bracket, you can back into so how much would the gift need to be in order to negate all capital gains taxes? You can back into that so that you effectively have a no capital gains tax transaction. And by the way, generally, what I've seen is that it's somewhere between 28 and, say, 35% is what the amount of the gift would need to be to offset the capital gains tax. That's kind of a moving number, but that's just a ballpark number. Appreciated property is deductible. Something to remember, because here's something that you'll then hear: oh, but I can deduct, if I give cash, I can deduct up to 50% of my adjusted gross income. The adjusted gross income is the number at the bottom, the front page of your 1040. And you can only deduct up to 50% of that in any given year. With appreciated property, it's only 30%. That's true, but you have a 5-year carry forward, so you can carry it forward into other years. And of course, it's a capital because it's been held 1 year or longer. Other appreciated property may be gifted with the same effect. For example, shares of stock that you purchased many years ago and just let it sit there. And I always say, keep the motive for giving in perspective, because sometimes in this whole thinking through of, well, how can I negate the tax and so on, it almost can be, you can get to where there's more emphasis on offsetting taxes than there is to benefiting charity and building the kingdom. So it has to be kept in perspective. Okay, now, as far as Anabaptist Foundation goes, we offer planned giving services to your charity. As an organization, we are different from just about any of the, I would say that there maybe there's, to my knowledge, there are 49 ministries that are represented here that all have programs, meaning there are things the ministries do, there are services they render, they're providing something for someone. Whereas we are a neutral intermediary, Anabaptist Foundation is a services organization. We just provide services to those who are funding all the rest of these 49 charities. We have no programs of our own, so we have no vested interest in steering funds in any given way. We're simply a neutral intermediary. And so we opt on that basis. We're not competing with any of the rest of the ministries here for funds. We offer our services. A public foundation caring for the soul of the donor, the gift itself, and the recipient charities. We're a neutral intermediary to enable supporters to make planned gifts to your charity. We offer back office services to assist your charity in processing non-cash gifts. When someone comes to I won't name any ministries. That wouldn't be fair. I'm just going to say the 49 ministries that have programs that where they're doing something. When someone comes to any of these 49, or most of them, and says, we would like to make a gift to your charity, but it's not in the form of cash. It's a commodity, or it's shares of stock, or it's real estate, or it's some other appreciated asset that's non-cash. There's like a, oh, how are we going to do that? This gets very complex. This is, we really are kind of geared to like open the mail and put checks in the bank. We're really not geared to receiving non-cash gifts and processing them or monetizing them so that we then have money in the bank. That's the service that Anabaptist Foundation offers, is to be the back office to assist your charity to process non-cash gifts. Since when someone wants to make a gift to charity like that, even if you go to your attorney and say, write in the will that we want to make this gift, okay, but will the recipient be able to receive the gift? And as a public foundation, we are able to receive gifts and facilitate the transaction, ensure that the proper procedures are followed and the proper protocols are followed to guard the deductibility of your gift, and then turn it into cash, either now or in the future at whatever time, based on the kind of gift that it is. And we've already talked about charitable bequests. So one other thing I want to mention, we had mentioned the charitable gift fund. The charitable gift fund can handle both kinds of, it's a donor-advised fund. It can handle both kinds of non-cash gifts, or it can also handle donations that of cash. But one way that your ministry could receive funds is to solicit commodities, for example. There are farmers who can benefit from giving a load of grain instead of giving cash. There are the most unusual I ever processed was thousands of dozens of eggs. It was scrambled eggs for many breakfasts. This is an egg producer who made a gift to charity, and it made sense for him to make the gift in the form of the commodity rather than selling it and then in the form of cash. And it can be done for anything upon which there is a market price that can be ascertained. And so we do this through one of the services we offer through the foundation is that if someone says, I want to donate a load of wheat to your ministry, then we will then have them contact Anabaptist Foundation, and we will then handle that whole transaction. And we don't take delivery, obviously, but the wheat goes to where it ought to go, and the funds end up eventually in your account. And we generate the tax deduction, deductible receipt, and so on. So another way to generate an alternative revenue stream. And I'm going to say that, and use the C word here, the quote, competition is not nearly so intense in that area.
If I may just make a quick comment, one great benefit of something like an organization like Anabaptist Foundation for smaller Anabaptist organizations is that they probably don't have the staff to deal with those technical issues, where if they do have donors that maybe want to deal with non-cash debt, they can just simply resource into you, and then they don't have to worry about getting competency in those areas.
And which is our mission and our calling, is not to compete in actually providing services to others or doing things in programs, but it's simply to be of service to the rest of the missions that are better at those things than we are. So we serve Amish, Mennonite, and Brethren across the U.S., there's the disclaimer. These materials have been prepared for general informational purposes. They're not accounting advice nor legal opinions on specific matters. Consult your tax advisor and legal counsel concerning your situation. And Anabaptist Foundation works closely with your attorney. But use our charitable giving tools to make receiving non-cash gifts of net worth as simple and easy as depositing checks in the bank. Okay, are there questions? Yes.
Why do you not offer the gift annuity option?
The gift annuity is a closed-end contract. And it's the annuity rates that are paid are based upon market earnings. We are, by principle, do not invest in the market. We invest all funds in our loans pool. And the loans pool has a predictable rate of return, but it does not support those annuity returns. So an annuity would be a future or like a life income gift that pays the donor. The way an annuity works is that a certain amount of money is placed, and then there is an agreed upon rate of interest paid for the life of the donor or the named beneficiary, after which the money goes to charity. In an annuity, there is an effort made to preserve the principal in as much as you can. And I think it can go down to what is the regulation? Would you know, Mark?
As far as
in an annuity, how much of the principal has to be preserved? Until it just kind of kicks up. What can happen is that a gift is made, and it actually erodes away based upon, because if you, again, this is not something we like to talk about, but if the average lifespan, it's based upon actuarial tables. Average lifespans. But if the average lifespan is, let's say, 75, that means half the people will die before that age, but it also means that half are going to die after that age. And so there are cases where the principal erodes.
An organization can actually be upside down in annuity. In other words, they end up having to cover from other assets of the organization, you know, if they live too long.
So the pooled income fund, in our case, we offer that same thing, but the principal is preserved. It's just sitting in our loans pool. It earns that rate of interest, and it's not as high as an annuity would be, but the principal is always going to be there, so that at the end of your life, that amount will go to charity. And I'll turn it back then to Conrad.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.